There was a super blistering hot summer day, and there was a family that was entertaining some guests for dinner that they had invited over. And when they were seated, the father, who was the host, looked over at his little six-year-old son, and he said to him, "Son, can you please say the blessing?" And the son says, "Dad, I don't know what to say." And the dad says, "Why don't you just repeat what I've been saying?" And the mom hopped in and says, "Yeah, just repeat what dad's been saying." He says, "Okay, Lord, why did I invite these people here on a hot day like this?" You know, the theme of this second chapter of Philippians is joy in serving. And that certainly isn't the joy in serving. We're talking about a submissive mind is what we're talking about. Paul has been addressing selfless humility in Christian service. There's something about this congregation. Paul founded this congregation, and there was something about this congregation that they were lacking in being, again, like-minded. They didn't have the same mindset. The congregation had individuals that were kind of rogue, going their own way. So Paul pleads to them to be like-minded in chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. Then Paul, after calling them to be like-minded, used Jesus Christ as the pattern of humility in verses 5 through 11. There's no one that is a better example of humility than the God of glory, who laid aside the glories of heaven to take on human flesh to die for the sins of the world. And then Paul talked about the believer's process. We talked about marks of humble service in verses 12 through 18. And Paul made it clear that the power for unity comes from God. Look at verse 13. "For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure." So the source is the Lord himself. That word "work" is the word energy, by which we get our word energize. If you are a Christian, God has energized you. God is energizing you to complete the salvation that he has started in you. So I'm sure at this point of the letter, as they're reading the letter and the congregation's checking out, they're going, "You know what? Okay, we shouldn't be grumbling like we're grumbling. We shouldn't be disputing. And there's no doubt that we should be living above reproach and good lights in the world before the world that we live in. But is it possible? Is it possible for me to live this way? Can a person actually do these things that the apostle is speaking about?" Well, not only can we do them, we're expected by God to do them. So what Paul does now in the closing of the second chapter is he gives to us examples of humility. He gives us some real flesh and blood examples of individuals that were selflessly giving of themselves to serve others and to serve God in verses 19 through 30. Now, here's the thought of our passage. We always like to take the passage and sort of boil it down to a thought. And here's our thought. Humble service was modeled through Jesus Christ, and God has provided real life examples of that humble service. Yes, Jesus was the model, but Jesus has not left himself without witness. There are models, and I would even suggest to you, and I'll even mention this right now in introduction, we've got some Timothys and Epaphroditus in this congregation. We've got some incredible examples here this morning, and we'll speak further about that. So here's the breakdown of it. Two examples. In verses 19 to 24, we have the example of Timothy. And I think most of us that have been Christians for any length of time, we know the name Timothy. Okay, Timothy, that was Paul's assistant. We know him. But the second one is in verses 25 through 30, which is the example of Epaphroditus. He's only mentioned in Philippians. He's mentioned two times in the entire New Testament. Well, Paul says some wonderful things about Epaphroditus as an example. So let's pick it up now in verse 19, and let's talk about the example of Timothy. I hope you have the notes this morning. I know we print them up and put them in the foyer. I think it's so wise to have the notes with you. You can print them out at home, bring them, put them in a binder, and then as God speaks to you, and he will, you can jot those things down in your notes. Maybe you'll come up with a passage that maybe we're not even using this morning. You go, well, what about this pen? This would fit so well right here. And God will definitely speak to you. And there's some folks here that I got to tell you, I was tempted last week. There's one of the sisters here, one of the young adults here. Her notes, I'm going, wow. She's got them color alliterated. You ought to see them. They're just amazing. I thought about scanning them and maybe just kind of putting them up there as an example of what we could do. Because here's the thing. We're taking notes. That's another way to reinforce what we're hearing. If all we're doing this morning, we're not taking notes and we're just listening. Some of us aren't even looking at our Bibles. So if we're just simply listening, there's a good chance we're not going to retain it. Now, if we're seeing it with our eyes and following along, that's going to help. Now, if you're writing it, that's going to help even more. So all of these ways, and by the way, the older you get, there's a hardening to the hard drive. Do you know what I'm talking about? Some of you don't know what I'm talking about. You will. But it's you just forget stuff. So this is a great way to reinforce it. So let's look here. Starting in verse 19, he says, but I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly. Now, the context of this is Paul has been speaking in verses 17 and 18 about sacrificial service to God and others. Now, Paul, writing this letter, uses his circumstances to illustrate sacrificial giving. Now, he's not doing it to say, look at me, look how cool I am, look how wonderful I am. He doesn't do it for that. He's simply stating the fact. This is what God has been doing. This is what God has allowed me to do. And the outcome of the sacrifice that I made was it's brought joy to my heart, and that joy now is splashing over to you. So look at verse 17, but even if I am being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I rejoice and share my joy with you. So I want my joy to be contagious in that it splashes off to you. And then in verse 18, Paul basically says, I pray that your joy then splashes back to me because of our service and our single-mindedness for the Lord. So he says here now, I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly. Now, I want you to note what Paul is saying here. He is acknowledging God's will, the divine will. It is very foolish to make plans and not include the Lord. It's a very dangerous thing. And we may even want the same things that God wants, but we better include him in it. We better include the Lord. Maybe we find ourselves enrolled in college and our goal that we just wake up to and throughout the day and we wake up in the night, we think about, I want to complete my education. I want to do this. I want to do this. That's a wonderful thing. And maybe, who knows, that may be the direction the Lord wants you to go, but you got to include God in it. And this is what Paul is doing. He's saying, Lord willing, Lord, this is what I want to do. I want to minister to these saints by sending them Timothy. This is what I want to do. And by the way, the purpose of prayer is to get us to realign our will with God's will. Oftentimes we start to pray about something and we realize that God is changing me. The situation may not be changing, but it is because it's starting with me. God is literally changing me. Now, there's many examples of this. Paul, at the end of his second missionary journey, announced to the Ephesian elders in Acts 18:21, he says, but taking leave of them, saying, I will return to you again if God wills. And he set sail from Ephesus. Well, God did. In the next chapter of Acts, Acts 19:1, Paul returns for an extended stay. But notice he included the Lord in that. Lord willing, I will return. And not only did God grant that, but God granted an extended stay. Paul, when writing to the Roman believers, said, I would like to come to you in joy and in the will of God. But listen to this in Romans 15:32, so that I may come to you in joy by the will of God and find refreshing rest in your company. Exactly. That's what happened. Paul returns to them in chains. But in his chains, he was in joy. That was the will of God for him to go as a prisoner of Rome to share the gospel with Caesar and those in Caesar's household. James warns about this in James 4, 13 through 16. He warns about making plans and not including God. Now, if we're doing this, we got to stop. We need to start injecting Lord willing. Lord, this is what I believe you want me to do, but Lord, I am open. I am open, and we need to be. So we come now to the name Timothy. Now, the name Timothy is mentioned 24 times in the New Testament. He truly is one of the key disciples of the Lord in the New Testament, his name being mentioned 24 times. Now, Timothy is a product of Paul's first missionary journey. When Paul and Barnabas were sent out by the church of Antioch, he came to a town called Lystra. While he was in Lystra, he was introduced to the mother of Timothy, who was a Jewish Christian. So she came to Christianity, and she was a Jew, and her husband was a Gentile. So that's one of those mixed marriages, you know, is where Timothy came from. So at this point, Timothy comes to the Lord. 7 years later, on his return to Lystra, 7 years, Paul sees that young Timothy has grown in leaps and bounds. And Paul then says, Timothy, I want you to be with me. I want you to be my assistant. I want you to come alongside of me. And so Paul literally poured himself into Timothy. Now, Timothy was a young man. I remember when I first started teaching, I would mention that I was young like Timothy. I can't say that anymore. Well, I still can say it, but it's not true. But the point is that he was young. He was a young guy, 30 years of age. And in that Jewish culture, that could be a real challenge. In Philippians 1:1, we read, Paul and Timothy, bond servants. So there, Paul and Timothy are linked together as slaves that are serving God out of love. So Paul wanted to send Timothy to the fellowship, to send Timothy to you shortly. This is what he went. Now, this was a sacrifice for Paul, because Paul's in a Roman prison cell. He doesn't know how long he's going to be there. He believes God's going to cut him loose pretty soon, which is true. It does happen. But he doesn't know how long he's going to be there. It's tough. We'll see that they had sent Epaphroditus to help him, but when Epaphroditus got there, he almost dies because he's sick. So here's Timothy trying to help Paul, and here's Paul consumed with the church that has sent him. So Paul says, okay, what I'm going to do is, though I need Timothy, I'm going to sacrifice and send Timothy to you. Because I think that's the greatest need. The Lord will take care of me. I'm more concerned about this congregation, so I want to send Timothy to you. Now that was a sacrifice, as we will see in a moment as we describe Timothy. So Paul would be encouraged when he received word, so that I also may be encouraged when I learn of your condition. So Paul is wondering what's going on with these Philippian believers. They had received this offering to send to Paul through Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus took it. He got sick. He got to the point of death. Paul winds up ministering to the one that came to minister for him. There is Timothy there, and he's thinking, you know what? I just need to send Timothy. I need to make sure that this congregation is doing well and they're well taken care of. As I look at this, I can't help but see how selfless the Apostle Paul was. He was the one in prison. There's a term that I looked up this week. I heard it, and I think we've all heard it a number of times. We hear the term me generation. You know the me generation, when you look it up and you define the phrase me generation, that is going back to 1970 to those that were adults in the 70s. I don't see a lot of difference between the 70s and 2025. This still is the me generation. I mean, people are just into themselves. I think personally it's gotten worse. I really do, because we got people saying, I have my truth, you have your truth, is what we have. So this truly is the me generation on steroids is what it is. That's literally what it is. That's the age that we find ourselves living in. And how opposite Paul was in that. Paul wasn't thinking about himself. He was thinking about the believers that were concerned about him and Epaphroditus. So he goes, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just sacrifice. I'm going to send literally my best is what he's going to. I'm going to send Timothy and we'll find out how they're doing. So verse 20 says, for I have no one else of kindred spirit who will genuinely be concerned for your welfare. So in these verses, Paul now presents to us a 5-point description of Timothy. And this is a glowing description. Any of us that could have these things said about us, wow, we are a humble servant. We are a servant that is sacrificially giving of ourselves. So the first one that he mentions, number one, was Timothy was like-minded. It says, for I have no one else of kindred spirit. Now that kindred spirit, this is the only time this is used in the New Testament. So this is a first mention. It's the only mention. And literally, kindred spirit means like-minded. And that's, by the way, been the whole theme of this second chapter. It could be translated like-souled or equal soul. So when it says that he was like-minded, he was faithful along with Paul. He had humility. He had love. He had a servant's heart. That was Timothy. I mean, I am describing Timothy. Now, Timothy was unique. He was one of a kind that Paul valued. Now, what does all of that mean? It just simply means that there was no one that was so much like Paul than Timothy. You know, we use the phrase kissing cousins, you know, is what he would be. And I mean, there's some of us here that are like this, and maybe, you know, you're a female and you're just like your mom. I mean, when people think of their mom, they think of you, and they think of your mom, they think, you know, they just go back and forth because you guys are identical. And there's some sons here today that are just the image of their father. They like the same things. They do the same things. They have the same mannerisms. Well, that's the way Timothy was. Timothy was, at best, almost a carbon copy of Paul. I mean, Paul could not send anyone better than Timothy. He even says, I'm sending myself, because that's literally what it was. It was like a carbon copy of himself. Notice the second description of Timothy, number two. Timothy had a genuine concern. Who will genuinely be concerned. This word genuinely means naturally and truly. Actually, the word itself can be translated birthright. So what it's describing is a new character or a new characteristic that took place through a new birth. Timothy was like the Lord. He was born again. He had taken on the likeness of Jesus Christ, and this is why he was like the Apostle Paul. He was one that genuinely, truly, truly cared. It wasn't a facade, it wasn't a veneer, it was a genuine love and concern. You know, every once in a while, we'll come across someone, I'm like in Home Depot and a couple walk up, oh, Pastor Terry, we were just thinking about you. And then in the background, the song comes on by the OJs, The Backstabbers, comes on. They smile in their face, and all I want to take care of is The Backstabbers, that shows up in the background. And you know it's phony because they've said trash about you on Facebook or different things. You know it's total phony. And what this is describing is someone that's the real thing. You know, I find interesting, we do this all the time. Most of us in here do it. We'll see somebody go, how are you doing? And the person starts to tell us, we're gone. Person goes, I hate my life, I'm going to commit suicide. Okay, God bless you, have a nice day. We don't even stand around and wait to hear what they say. How are you doing? Terrible. Well, that's great. Have a blessed day. Timothy would be the one that would look you in the face and say, you're having a terrible day. Is there something I can pray with you about? Tell me what's going on. We're both busy, but hey, this is important. It's important that you would tell me. So that's the way Timothy, it's the real thing. It's the real thing. He really cared. He was genuine. It was from his birth, his new birth. He really, really cared. And the term welfare means the things concerning you. So again, it was a real concern. It was real. It was genuine. That's why Paul sends his best of his best, is Timothy. Number three, Timothy was selfless. Not selfish, selfless, verse 21, for they all seek after their own interests, not those of Christ Jesus. So Paul looks over all the different converts and all the different ones, and he goes, you know, there is no one better than Timothy. So many servants are self-seeking, their own interests. We would say they're doing their own thing. And it's sad sometimes because there are those that want to serve in the church because they want the position of power. There are some that want to serve in the church because they want a name. They want a title. There's some in the church that want the position because they have outside interests. And I'll use this illustration. I've seen this multiple times. We get those mailings at election time, and you'll get a candidate, and you start reading the description of the candidate. Oh, they're a member of this church. They're on the corporate board. I look at that, and I go, I smell a fish. I really do. I mean, why do they even mentioning that? They could just say they're a believer in Jesus or something, but no, they got to mention the church. They got to mention the fact that they're a board member. Oh, I've been serving in Sunday school and doing this for 20-some years. And it really makes you wonder, is it really sincere? Are they using it as a stepping stone to an office or something? Well, Paul looked at it and he says, it's all just fake. A lot of them are doing their own thing. You know, but here, Timothy was the real thing. We should love opportunities to serve the Lord. And I'll tell you, when you serve the Lord, you're going to be tested and you're going to be tried. I love that old saying that Christians are like tea bags. They're no good until they're put in hot water. And you got to be put in the hot water. That's the only way you're going to get the tea, right? Or how about a faith that can't be tested, can't be trusted? So, we have to be tested. We have to. So Paul looks at his list there and he looks at his short list and he goes, I don't have anybody. There's only one. It's the best of the best. I'm sending Timothy. He's the one that's going to do it. Look at number four. Timothy manifested Jesus. Referring to those others, not those of Christ Jesus. So the others that he's thinking about on his short list, they were the ones that had their own interests. They were doing their own thing, but not Timothy. Timothy exalted the Lord. Timothy loved the Lord with all of his heart. Look at verse 22. But you know of his proven worth. You know. Oh, this congregation knew Timothy. And Paul need not go into detail regarding Timothy at all because they knew him. They had watched him. They had seen his love for the Lord. They had seen his sacrificial giving of himself. Again, he had proven himself. The word proven is an interesting word. In the Greek, it's metal that has been tested by the heat of fire. So he was tested. He had gone through the fire. He had gone through the good and the bad times, and when nothing seemed to be going on, he was faithful. He was there. And that brings us to number five, Timothy was a servant. That he served with me. Now back in chapter 1, verse 1, we were introduced to Timothy and Paul, where Paul says, Paul and Timothy, bond servants of Christ Jesus. So that is a servant that serves out of love. He chooses to serve his master because he loves his master and he's serving out of his love for his master. That describes Timothy and Paul. And notice that they were bond servants together. And why am I saying that? Because ministry is not mine. Ministry is not yours. Ministry is the Lord. And some are kind of like these Avenger movies, they're superheroes where they want to serve God by themselves. That isn't ministry. We don't serve God by ourselves. We lock arms with our brothers that we serve God together. Let me ask the question, do you serve God together with others? Or would you say, well, I'd rather just do it by myself? Rather just serve God myself. I'd rather just kind of, because I like doing things the way I like doing them, and that's just, that's not a servant's heart. A servant's heart is locking arms and doing what needs to be done. Last Sunday, this was exemplified in setting up all these trees, and you just see all these different folks, different backgrounds that all came in open. How do you want it? How's it supposed to be? And they just put it together. There's just servants working together. Now, if one person, each person says, well, this is how I'm going to do it, it doesn't work. It has to be united. There has to be this single-mindedness, this one-mindedness, this like-mindedness. There has to be an order for us to serve. Can I work with others? Notice something else about this servant, the gospel servant. He was involved in the furtherance of the gospel like a child serving his father. So in his service, it was with the idea of exalting Jesus Christ. The gospel is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. That's what the gospel is. It's the good news. I am lost. God died for me. He was buried, and on the third day, he was raised, signifying that the debt was paid in full. Then he ascended into heaven and sits at the right hand of the Father. Nothing else needs to be added to the work of salvation. It was completed by Christ. We receive it when we place our faith in Jesus Christ. So, again, furtherance of the gospel like a child serving his father. And Paul was the one that mentored him. He was the one that took Timothy, as we would say, under his wing and began to teach him and to minister to him. In 2 Timothy 3:10, now you followed my teaching, conduct, purpose, faith, patience, love, and perseverance. Timothy, you did this. You adopted my teaching. You took it as your own. You watched my conduct. You watched my behavior. You looked at the love that I had. You've been mimicking me. Verse 14 of 2 Timothy 3. You, however, continue in the things you've learned and become convinced of, knowing from whom you have learned them. And from childhood, you have known the sacred writings, which are able to give you wisdom that leads to salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus. So Timothy had been introduced to Christ through his mom, and his grandmother played an important part. But Paul then took him after 7 years and mentored him and turned him into his assistant, is what he did. Look at verse 23. Therefore, I hope to send him immediately, as soon as I see how things go with me. So again, Paul again is again wanting to see how things are going to turn out. He's trusting the Lord. He said, Lord willing, he's been trusting the Lord, and he's wanting to send him, but he's waiting just a bit to see what is the outcome of this trial that I have. Now, history tells us and tradition tells us that Paul did get kicked loose after a couple years. He then traveled for several more years preaching and teaching and starting churches. He was then rearrested, came back to Rome, was on trial, and there they literally decapitated him. They took off his head. Now that's how tradition and kind of the history goes regarding Paul. So he was. Paul was kind of had the inkling that he was going to get kicked loose. God's kind of leading him that way. That, you know, you're not going to be here forever. This is, you're going to get more time to do what you need to do. So look at verse 24. And I trust in the Lord that I myself also will be coming shortly. So again, notice again him including the Lord in his plans. He wanted to do it, and yes, it aligned itself with God. Now, let me just mention this as we leave Timothy this morning. You know, Timothy had obstacles that were against him. There's three areas that I want to bring to your attention regarding Timothy. Because some of us think, well, you know what? I'll serve God when all the ducks are lined up, when everything is perfect, then I'll serve God. Well, let me just tell you, you'll probably never serve God. Because there's always going to be obstacles to serving the Lord. Let me mention Timothy's three. The first one was he was young. Tells us this in 1 Timothy 4:12. Paul says, let no man look down on your youth. You know, I came to the Lord back in 75. I was 19. And then the next year, 20 years of age, I taught for the very first time. You know who I taught? The senior adult Sunday school class. I was 20 years old. I looked over that crowd and some of them had crossed the Red Sea with Moses. I kid you not. I was like freaking out. There's this little 20-year-old standing before some of these folks that knew Moses personally. And I was like talking to these folks. And some of them were like sitting there going, you better bless me. You better say something I've never heard before. And I got to tell you, I was freaking out. I was sweating great drops of blood. I was like freaking out. And so sometimes we get in those situations where we're young in the Lord or we're young physically, and God puts us in positions where we got to deal with people that are more mature than us, that are physically older than us. But if that's where God put you, you got to go with it. And that's where Timothy was put. Second thing about Timothy, he was timid. 2 Timothy 1:7, Paul says, God's not given us a spirit of timidity, but a power and love and a sound mind. He had this tendency of getting fearful and getting scared and just, we would say, freaking out. So Paul's talking to him. He says, listen, God's not giving you the spirit of timidity. He hasn't given you the spirit of freaking out all the time. That's you. You got to have discipline. You got to have a sound mind. You need to dwell upon the Lord, Timothy. You got to work through this stuff. Some of us freak out over everything. Here's the third thing. He had physical problems. In 1 Timothy 5:23, Paul speaks about his frequent ailments. Timothy was sickly. I want to say this morning. You know, there are people in this church right now that are going through chemotherapy that are serving God here in the church. I'm serious. There are people in this church that have gone through radiation and they continue to serve God. And some of us in here, I mean, we hear those things and we go, well, how could that be? You know, and some of us say, well, I can't serve God because I work a job during the week. Wow. It's like most of us. You know, today would be a great day to say, you know what? No more excuses. This is no excuse Sunday. On the way out, I'm going to pick up a ministry questionnaire, and I'm going to start serving God. I love that saying, save to serve, because it's true. Some of us have been here for years, and we've yet to serve the Lord in some capacity. Shame on us. Shame on us. If it takes the example of Timothy to get us going, then so be it. On the way out, to my right, your left, you can stop by the reception desk and say, I want a ministry questionnaire. And here's the thing. You fill it out. Here's the next one. This is really important. Turn it in. You're laughing right now. A person told me a while ago, you know, Pastor, I filled it out 3 years ago. It's still on my desk. It doesn't do any good on the desk. I'll give you a stamp. I'll give you an envelope. Give it to me. I'll take it to the office. And here's another one. This is even better. You can fill it out online. For some of us, that's great because our writing looks like hieroglyphics, you know, so our printing is so terrible. But you could actually fill it out through the app or through the website. It would be a great day for us as a congregation to start serving Him. We're always going to have obstacles. There's always going to be something that's going to happen. But you know what? We need to be single-minded for the Lord. We need to have like-mindedness. Here's the second example now in verses 25 through 30 is the example of Epaphroditus. It says, for I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus. Now, the name Epaphroditus means lovely or charming. I don't know if I'd want to be called charming or lovely at all, but I think the reason he is called this is because his name is derived from Aphrodite, who was a Greek goddess. This Greek goddess was a god of love and beauty. So his name is derived from that. So I don't know what, but it kind of reminds me of that song by Johnny Cash, A Boy Named Sue. I don't know who gave him that name. But they did. You know, his name only appears two times in the entire Bible. He appears here in verse 25 and in verse chapter 4, verse 18. Now, this is interesting. I didn't make this up, but this is kind of interesting. There are five things that Paul says about Timothy. Well, there are five things that he says about Epaphroditus. He's wanting to give to us examples where no one can come back and say, well, I don't know if I can do it. So he gives us examples, and he points out some of the characteristics, the descriptions of these individuals. So the first one is, number one, my brother. That's the first thing that Paul says about Epaphroditus. He's my brother. Now, by saying he's my brother, he's saying he is born again. He's been regenerated by God. He belongs to God. Now, that's important. Now, we're living in a culture that says we're all brothers and sisters in God. No, we're not. We're all brothers and sisters of the same race, of the human race, but it's inaccurate to call ourselves all sons and daughters of God, because we're not. The only ones that are sons and daughters of God are those like Epaphroditus that are born again. Next month, we're going to be showing the movie here on a Wednesday night, One Race, One Blood. Now, we showed it a couple years ago. It's really good. It's put out by Answers in Genesis by Ken Ham. I love this movie. It is such a great movie. He gets into the chromosomes and all the so forth, and it's just an amazing thing. And his case that he puts before us is that every human being has come from the same parents. But you got folks today in our society, specifically in the political arena, that are constantly wanting to divide us. They go, what about the Asian race? What about the Hispanic race? What about the black race? Listen, there's no such thing. It's called the human race. That's it. Yes, there are minute differences. And by the way, when we get into it, they're minute. The differences are minute. They really are. When you look at how much alike we all are, well, we have to be. We come from the same parents. And that's going to be the point. So you need to be here. When we showed it 2 years ago, it was a really good turnout. Well, we're going to show it again. Now we got these great screens that we can watch it on. But it's going to be a great, great movie. One Race, One Blood. Number two, he's a fellow worker. A fellow worker. He's a companion in labor. He was working together. Now, I find this interesting. Now, Paul says that. You know what's interesting? Paul's an apostle, and he calls Epaphroditus a fellow worker. See, Paul never got into this, I'm an apostle and you're not. I am writing most of the New Testament and you haven't. Paul just looked at himself as a servant. He looked at himself as a brother. This notion that we're better than everybody else is ridiculous. It really is. And Paul never, ever played that game. He looked at Epaphroditus, which I believe is a layman. He's one of the men of the congregation. Doesn't have an official title. He's not called an elder, apostle, nothing. He's a messenger sent by God. And Paul looks at him. He goes, you know what? He's my brother. He's my brother. Number three, fellow soldier. Fellow soldier. So Paul recognizes Epaphroditus as having put on the armor. Of course, we know about that in Ephesians 6, where Paul tells us, put on the full armor of God that you will be able to withstand the attacks of the enemy or of the devil himself. And so we need to put on the armor of God. When Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:3, he says, a good soldier of Jesus Christ. You see, being a Christian is not life on the playground, it's life on the battleground. We are up against the world, the flesh, and the devil. There isn't a person in here that can go up against the world, the flesh, and the devil in their own strength without God. You can't do it. You will not win. You will lose. So the only way to gain victory is to put on the full armor of God. And we looked at that in detail when we went through Ephesians, and we described the seven different pieces of armor, and we talked about it, and then we talked about prayer that helps us to put each one of the particular parts onto our bodies and so forth. It's all necessary. Number four, your messenger, who is also your messenger. So he was among the congregation. He came out of the congregation of Philippi. And he denied himself. He was a man of humility that says, I will go, there is a need, I will go, and I will serve. Now, this word messenger is normally translated apostle, but it's not mentioned here at all. He's not an apostle, never claims to be an apostle at all. But he is a messenger that traveled 800 miles. He went from Philippi to Rome, which was 800 miles, that would take a minimum of 3 months to get there. Oh, by the way, I just checked it out, 2 hours by plane. That for us is nothing. That's like from here to Frisco. 2 hours, you know, no, it's a little far. It's a bit like from here to Seattle. It's like from here to Seattle it would be. So it would take him 3 months, and it was a tough, tough travel. 800 miles, 3 months. And he tells us that, again, that he was that messenger that came with the offering. He is the one that came with the word from the Philippian believers as to what was taking place. And then number five, he's a minister to your need. The word minister is referring to a sacred service. He was offering a sacred service. He was delivering the offering from the Philippians to Paul, who was in prison. He was going to be an extension of ministry of the Philippians to Paul. In Philippians 4:18, we read these words, but I have received everything in full and have an abundance. I am amply supplied, having received from Epaphroditus what you have sent, a fragrant aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. So that's the second time his name is mentioned. It is in conjunction with the offering that the Lord had sent through the Philippians. So verse 26 says, because he was longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. So notice that Epaphroditus was homesick. This word longing means he was constantly longing after you. You go back to Philippians 1:8, Paul said that about his own self. He says, for God is my witness how I long for you all with the affection of Christ Jesus. This week I was met with a dear friend. His wife died 3 months ago. They were married 52 years. To say that he's hurting is an understatement. But something he said to me during our conversation, he says, Terry, I don't know how I could have done this without the church. There are people that bring over meals to me. There are people that show up and just want to give me a hug. There are people that say, we've made a dinner, please stop by. He said, it is incredible, the love of the fellowship. He goes, I don't know how a person does it without the Lord. I can't even fathom how they can do it without the Lord. Well, if Epaphroditus was here this morning, he would say the same thing. He says, when I think of those that I love, I think of the Philippian congregation. I absolutely love that congregation. That congregation is my life. And for some of us here, I say this, and some of you have said this to me too, that your church family is closer to you than your physical family. Some of us in here were disowned when we trusted Jesus, so this now is our family. And that's why we love it so much, because it's our family. This is our brothers and sisters. They pray for me, I pray for them. I love them, they love me. And this is my family. This is it. We always like to say this. Make the church calendar your calendar. Don't plan stuff without looking at the calendar, because you don't want to interfere with what the Lord's doing in your family. And you got a husband and wife celebrating their anniversary. Your husband doesn't check the calendar. He goes on a fishing trip. Last fishing trip he'll ever take. Think about it. You only forget one time. You wouldn't do that. Oh, it's our anniversary. Huh? I think I'll go water skiing. I think I'll go fishing. I think I'll go do that. I think I'll go to Bass Pro Shop. Oh, you're dead. You're dead. You wouldn't do that. So make the calendar your calendar. And so he says, and he was distressed. And that word distress is an interesting word. It's used another time in Matthew 26:37. It was used of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus realized the weight of every sin was being dropped on him. And Jesus was in distress, anguish. And that's how Epaphroditus looked. I'm away from home. I'm away from my family. Man, it feels like the world has collapsed on me. I am one hurting guy. And notice it says, because you had heard that he was sick. So here he comes to minister to Paul. He gets sick. And now Paul has to minister to him. So what does he do? He now freaks out and is just absolutely wiped out over the fact that the church knows that he's been sick and he's missing the church. It's kind of like the person in the hospital, the patient in the hospital that's worrying about everybody back home. And I've been to hospital bedsides where I've left going, man, that was an encouraging visit. I feel better after seeing them. Because they love the Lord, they're trusting in the Lord, and you go there to kind of pray for them and encourage them, and they wound up saying, oh, Pastor, this is fantastic what's going on. Guess who I got to talk to yesterday? Guess what my brother said? Guess what? And they're going, this is unbelievable. Pastor, you got to catch cancer. This is wonderful. This is just wonderful what's going on. And this is where this guy's at. He's coming to ministry. Now he's all bummed out that they've heard that he was sick. Now, he goes on now in verse 27, and he talks about how severe this really was. He says, for indeed he was sick to the point of death. Now, many believe that what happened was Epaphroditus left Philippi. It was a three-month journey, 800 miles, and he got sick heading to Rome. By the time he got to Rome, he was sick. But guess what he did? He kept serving Paul. Here he was with a body that's breaking down and the body saying, you can't do anything more. You're done. You're finished. Oh, he kept going. He kept serving. No, it's okay. I'll be fine. He just keeps serving and serving and serving. And he says to the point of death, which literally translated, he gambled with his life. I don't know if I'm going to make it or not, but you know what? I'm going to keep serving Paul. I don't know if I'm going to die doing it, but you know what? So be it. I'm going to serve Paul. But notice his healing, but God had mercy on him. That's interesting. There's some today that teach the health and wealth gospel. Christians should never be sick. Christians should never be poor. Where's Paul's healing ministry here? Somehow Paul wasn't able to heal him, and Paul doesn't take any credit for the healing that happened. He says God did it. And this nonsense that every Christian should always be healthy and wealthy is baloney. It's not taught in the Bible. Here's a good example of it right here. A person that came to death's door and God steps in and miraculously heals him. And not only him, but also on me, so that I would not have sorrow upon sorrow. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. In some of our prayers, God works many facets to bring about his will. Think about what's involved in this situation right here. You got Paul's sorrow that the guy they sent to him is deathly ill. And he's freaking out that the congregation's freaking out because the one they sent is sick and now Paul's having to serve him. Then you got this body that is broken at the point of death. And then at the same time, you got Christians 800 miles away that are freaking out over the fact the one they sent is sick and he may not be able to come back home. Now, how's God going to work this out? Well, he does. Now he works it out. He heals him. God decides to heal him. Look at verse 28. Therefore, I have sent him and all the more eagerly so that when you see him again, you may rejoice and I may be less concerned about you. Now, notice his reunion, the therefore, I'm sending him back. God healed him. You've been worried about him. I'm sending him back. God did a miracle. I'm sending him back to you, therefore. so that when you see him, you may rejoice and I may be less concerned about you. And not only when I send him back, are you going to be blessed? I'm going to be blessed because I'll know that you're not concerned about him anymore. And plus he's healed. God fixed the whole thing. The whole thing was fixed by God. And he says, you may rejoice. How selfless of Paul. What a servant of Paul to say, you know what? Now that he's healed, maybe he can help me out now. He doesn't do that. He goes, no, though you could help me out and it would be better that you help me out, I think it's far better that I send you back home so that the congregation doesn't worry about you. And he says, and I may be less concerned about you. Verse 29, receive him then in the Lord with all joy and hold men like him in high regard. So again, Paul is thinking of them, and I want you to note the two things that he says here. Receive him with joy. Give him a spiritual reception. When he comes home, you just throw a party for him. And also honor men like him. Now, that's interesting because it should say honor a man like him, but it says men because Epaphroditus becomes the prototype for all men and women that would serve Jesus, that would sacrificially give of themselves to serve God. People like Epaphroditus, we need to hold in high regard, and we need to have joy over them. We need to be thankful for them. And I'll tell you, we've got Epaphroditus's in this congregation. There are people in this congregation that don't know a day without pain, but you would never know it because they're the ones serving God. As I mentioned, there's folks in this church on chemo and radiation that are serving God. That's the Epaphroditus. That's the servant. That some of us would say, oh, just stay home and rest. You need to get your rest. No, I got to do this. I want to do this. We just have to order them home because they just want to serve. Look at verse 30. Because he came close to death for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was deficient in your service to me. So Paul gives two reasons for his commendation. Number one, in his work for Christ, he risked his life. He came close to death, but he continued to serve God. Even though he was deathly ill, he continued to serve the Lord. Number two, and he attempted to make up for the church's absence, risking his life. This word risking is an interesting word. It's actually by which we get our English word gamble. Gamble comes from risking. What it was is the Greeks had a contest where they would carve and make a replica of a wooden knife. And they would take the knife and they would hold the knife up with the tip pointing down towards the soil and they would let loose of it. And the knife that went straight down, that was perfectly straight, is the one that won. And that's what Epaphroditus did. I'm going to keep sticking. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep doing this because I am going to pick up the slack. Anything that is lacking, I want to fill it. And I'm willing to risk my life to do that. I want to close with three things this morning, three quick things. Number one, is our life of ministry focused on being selfish or self-focused or the me generation or selfless? Placing others' needs before our own. When you think of needs, what do you think of, your own or do you think of others? Number two, Timothy had obstacles. His age, he was young, he was timid, he had physical ailments, but none of these obstacles deterred Timothy from his service with humility, nothing. And number three, has our service in the Lord, like Epaphroditus, cost us something in our service with humility for others? Ministry that costs little produces little. If you're going to serve God, it's going to cost you. And I'm just telling you that right now. You want to serve Jesus Christ, it's going to, you're going to want You're called and you're committed to serve God and something else is going to come up. That's cost. You're going to do the right thing and you're going to serve God.